Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And today we have our very first interview on the podcast. And we have Victor with us. Victor is a very high-level umpire and official across many different sports. And well, we're happy to have you today, Victor.
Thank you.
Welcome again to the show.
Welcome back.
Hey, welcome back. Yeah. So we had some technical difficulties at our first go, and here we are back. All right. So, Victor, a couple of things. You know, I met you originally. You reminded me recently when I was coaching college softball and said, hey, you know, I really want to go to the next level. And I think you said, well, you're talking to the right guy. And that absolutely turned out to be the case because I went to your camp last fall and was fortunate enough to be seen by some really great assigners, got some good feedback and got picked up and did some games for you this year in the fall and spring for this season. And it was fantastic. And I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to meet with Pete and I and do this interview for our listeners. We're really hopeful that we're going to have some good stuff here. And I'm confident that we're going to have good stuff here for people who want to move forward in their careers. So thanks again for taking time to join us.
Absolutely. Lots of fun to be here. Always fun to talk about officiating.
Yeah, especially in softball for me. It's my number one, but that's not the only sport that you officiate. What other sports have you officiated or do you officiate now, Victor, and at what levels?
Okay, so the past, I've done volleyball and baseball. Volleyball, I've done tournament, the high school tournament throughout Indiana. Baseball, I've also been a tournament umpire and all the way up to Division I baseball. Then I guess I'm retired from soccer. We'll see. I've said I've retired, but we'll see about that. But that I've also done tournament and college soccer and high school and college basketball on the women's side for college. Also been a tournament official and I've worked up to D3 and D2 now in women's college. So yeah, my sons always tell people I'm an idiot savant for officiating, but they also silently say it. Sometimes he's just an idiot.
Just the idiot part. Yeah, understood. Completely understand that piece of it. So this is it's your vocation now. Is that right, Victor? So you're an assigner in the collegiate softball world.
I'm an assigner. I'm a tournament event organizer. I also, again, I'm still a very active official. I also, I thought that I was just a sports event organizer, but through my little LLC, I've developed some more things for my sons. So we are now event organizers as we're putting on a festival in my whole hometown. My youngest son is getting his social media certificates so that he can branch off as part of our business into doing social media for local companies. Yeah, every time I think I'm done trying to do something new, I do something new. So
something new comes up. Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, thanks to one of the reasons that I do what I do, Victor, is that the kids, the players, the athletes deserve somebody to make sure that they get to have a fair contest with themselves. So I think from my coaching background, you know, raising up a fast pitch player and a volleyball player and thinking about the officials that are out there, making sure that they have a fair contest. It's a tough job. And I really appreciate the fact that you do it and you do it at a level that I would aspire to do someday. I can't get as high as you got. I just won't. Starting at 52 years old, roughly, I certainly won't get there. But
here's a funny thing. I was talking about this with somebody before, and that used to be the case, right? It used to be, you know, hey, at 49, 50, you've got to pass everybody who's already been doing it. And I'm 49. I've been doing it for 36. Oh, my, wait a minute. Yeah, 36 years. This is my 36th season coming up. But where it used to be, there was hundreds of umpires, hundreds of basketball officials, hundreds of whatever. Now that's no longer the case. So what I tell people anymore is it likely? No. Is it possible? Yes. And the reason why it's possible is because if you're one of five umpires and the other four are already working, you get the job.
Up you go. Yeah.
Win by default. It's been very, you know, it's been very exciting and very disheartening at the same time. I say that knowing, you know, I had to fight pretty hard to get all the games I did as I was coming up. And it's exciting for me to teach and watch some of these newer officials go grow. I don't say younger, I say newer, and see them get to do things that, you know, I had to take a long time to do. It's also a little disheartening because now some of them, and in fact, my girlfriend has passed me, and I kind of go, and she tells me all the time, baby, you're still really good. You're actually probably better than me, but it's just one of those things. It's a numbers game. And so I keep telling people now when I go to these camps, don't give up. Don't think to yourself that you can't do it. You might be surprised. So, you know, I eliminate all the things that you can. Don't be overweight. Don't be, you know, don't show up sloppy to the game. Don't, you know, argue with the clinicians, and you might be surprised.
Yeah.
Even the camp that we did this year, there's two or three guys. One guy came to me and said, well, I don't think I'm ready yet. I just want to learn to get better, maybe do it in 3 years. And I already told him, you're going to get some games. You may not want them, but where you're located and, you know, the effort you've shown me and the amount he grew in that 3 days that I worked with him, I'm going to give him an opportunity. And awesome. I think it's going to be beneficial for him. And honestly, it's like swimming. You really don't know if you're going to sink or swim until you jump in the water a little bit.
Yeah. I just saw the clip from the John Wayne movie where he picked the little boy up and threw him. You don't know how to swim. He threw him in the water, and he threw his mom in too after that. So
yep.
Sometimes you just got to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate that for sure. We're going to talk a little bit more here later in the interview about how you progress and how you get better. But what's the highest level at which you've umpired fast pitch softball?
Well, again, you know, I think it depends on what you're talking about, but I guess the best matchup game I've ever had was I got to have, this is about 8 years ago, Monica Havitt and Kat Osterman going at each other in the pro leagues. And like I tell people all the time, I said, doesn't matter who you put me out there against or out there with, there's never going to be a game more intense and better than that. As far as the way the game was played, I believe Monica won 1-0, but I don't think Kat gave up an earned run. I think it was an error and a bunt and then a ball thrown away. It was really a fast game, though. The commercials were long. Other than that, nothing.
Right? Yeah, I can only imagine with, you know, that's three up, three down most of the time. You know, that goes pretty quick. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, what a game. Holy cow. That's definitely would be in the tops, you know, for me. Where was that game played?
I believe that was in Peoria. It was when the Pride was moving around from place to place. And you know, honestly, the Pride has always been kind of a road team. Now that they don't exist right now, but my understanding is there's rumblings they're coming back. But they'd always traveled kind of with USSSA tournaments. And Peoria was someplace that they were trying to get into to really make it a USSSA area. I believe they did that, but it was a fun game to be involved in.
Oh, I imagine it was. Yeah. Well, that's really cool. You can't see me grinning, but I'm grinning like, from ear to ear. But
so, Victor, you mentioned, you know, with doing other sports and everything else, how much softball do you actually get to umpire? Like fall, winter, spring, national events, stuff like that. So where fitting it in with your assigner duties and some of your event stuff?
Well, so I started off when I was younger, I would do as many games as possible the collegiate season. And again, I did it mostly out of desperation. That's how I made money for my family and put food on the table. I don't really have any other marketable skills, but I would take as many games as I could wherever. Now, as I've gotten a little more, and I'm 49, so I don't know how advanced I feel, but I am older than I was. And I realize the mileage on my body is higher. So I try not to work quite as much. That being said, you know, I still work ACC, the Atlantic 10, you know, the Big East, the MAC. So I work pretty much every weekend that I want to. What I do a little bit different than a lot of the higher level umpires at the D1 levels, I work a lot during the week. I do it for a couple of different reasons. One, I'm working on keeping my strike zone the way I want it during the season. And number two, I also try and work with some of these younger officials as they come in. So I do a lot of D3, NAIA. I was scheduled for a couple JUCO games last year, but they got rained out.
Well, I sure would love to do a game with you. So that'd be fun. I'd enjoy that.
You never know where I'm going to pop up, especially when I'm traveling. I don't work as many national events as I used to. I just have progressed to the point where I don't really think I can put my mental frame of mind through seven games hard throughout the day. And I say all that knowing that a certain blonde in my life has got me to do a few events this year because she said, well, we'll have fun. We'll see how much fun I have.
Yeah, exactly. I feel the same way. And I know that it's much to Mike's chagrin, but, you know, we've got, you know, the Lasers event was just last weekend or two weekends ago, I think it was. And then Stingrays is coming up, which, by the way, the Excel Camp on Thursday, you and Whitney worked, me and Mike, and there was, I think, Jose, there was a bunch of us there. So that was a fun thing. And that's next Thursday.
She actually just walked in, so I picked on her a little bit more.
Oh, so she can hear. Yep. All right. Can she hear us too? That's going to be funny.
Yes. Yes, she can hear
us. All right. Well, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And again, we're in Oklahoma City. I know you guys are back there. I'm excited for her. She gets to work on the big stage tonight and tomorrow, and it's exciting for me to watch her. I've got to do it once myself now, and to see her progress. That's actually to see any of the umpires I've touched progress. That's really kind of the reason why I keep doing the things that I do. I just love seeing people get to do the stuff, you know, that I have either gotten to do or you know, there's going to be people who do things that I'll never do. And it's pretty awesome. It's just kind of nice to see people enjoying something that maybe I helped them get a little better at.
Yeah, that's awesome.
She's going to pass
me. That's the coaching stuff. Yeah, well, she doesn't know that you already said that she did. So she'll know when she listens to the podcast. So it's kind of like playing a poker hand and then knowing that the poker hand's on television and the people you are playing against are going to see it. Right. So Victor, can you share with us your journey to becoming a top level fast pitch softball umpire? I mean, you did a ton of, you know, arbiting, if you will, you know, from the time, I think, if I did the math right, from the time you were 13, you know, in many different sports, 14. Okay. And so, you know, but you've obviously reached the tippy top, if you will, of fast pitch softball umpiring. I can't imagine, you know, anybody doing something. I agree with you that game was fantastic. And if at once, maybe I had in my head that the last game of the Division I Women's College World Series, you know, having the plate for that would be probably the top for me. But then I'm like, well, wait a minute. Then there's Monica was playing against Kat, and, you know, it's like, that's pretty high too. So anyway, yeah. You obviously got there. So what was your journey? What did it look like? How'd you get started in fast pitch? And then how did you get to the point where you are today? And remember, it's about a 35 or 40 minute podcast. So
so you don't want me to go year by year. Okay. I guess what happened really is, you know, I started to give the very, very beginning. I started doing little league, peewee league baseball while I was playing pony league baseball, mostly because they offered to pay me $14 in quarters and I could go to the arcade and play Miss Pac-Man and Pac-Man all day. That is the honest truth. And actually, they paid us an extra dollar in quarters if we were able to get there and line the field. So me and my buddy started showing up earlier and earlier and earlier and lining the field at 9 o'clock in the morning. They finally said, look, we'll just give you each an extra dollar so you guys don't get here so early. As I played college baseball and moved up, of course, I moved into high school baseball as an umpire. Then when I got done playing college baseball, which literally was once they figured out I couldn't stay in class, I started doing more and more baseball. I happened to pick up my softball license just because they said, well, you get three when you sign up, so you might as well get softball too. It's basically baseball. Which was not true. Not true at all. When the first softball game I ever did, which is very, it's funny, I actually ran into the man I was supposed to work with that day who didn't show up. This was before cell phones, young children. They called me and got me before I left, said, hey, we're moving the game to a different park. Can you go to this park instead? Sure. Again, my first softball game ever. My partner didn't get the call, so he showed up at the other park. I thought it just got rained out. I'm doing softball by myself. Looking around out there going, why do they have a circle out in the middle of the field? Is that kind of showing the approximation of a mound? So I did that game, had a great time, thought it was really fast, but, you know, it's just baseball with things that I didn't understand. So there's a bunch of rules I probably never even looked at or didn't call correctly, but everybody thought I did a decent job for a JV girls softball game in high school.
Yeah.
Continued up my journey in college baseball and was standing on the field with, oh, I can't remember his name now, Jeff. But we were at Dayton University playing Wright State. We did a 13-inning game, and I had one call in 4.5 hours on the bases, and I missed it. And Tony Vitello from Dayton came out and told me I missed it, and then told me he was going to go talk to my mom, who happened to be sitting right next to the dugout, and tell her I missed it. And he did, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure.
But in the meantime, I looked over and saw the Dayton softball team show up, warm up, play their game, leave, and I had gotten through like 5 innings. And I said, I'm doing the wrong sport. So I started doing college softball for Mary Taylor. I will say Kathy Graff then got me to a camp. Mary Taylor paid for me to go to one of Kathy Graff's camps. And it's funny, where we were at, again, I'm in Oklahoma City with Whitney, and we went to the USA Softball Hall of Fame, and Emily Alexander, who was at the time the head of the NCAA and is in the USA Hall of Fame, was the clinician who watched me, told me, actually took me over to a bunch of assigners and said, this young man is a Division I umpire. We need to move him along. I didn't even know who she was.
Wow.
But Emily is a wonderful person. And I think anyone who's worked or been around and under Emily Alexander would say the same thing. She was a great influence on a ton of umpires. But anyway, so she moved me along. Betsy Kidd from Georgia gave me my first assignment in the Atlantic Sun. I was supposed to do Belmont against Eastern Illinois University, which I didn't know either school existed. I showed up, got rained out, got paid for being rained out, which I thought was an amazing benefit to doing college softball, and drove to my very next and then first game ever, which was assigned to me by Lurleen Hamilton, and it was North Carolina State against Kentucky on ESPN.
Wow.
And I puked in my throat a little bit. And
yeah, I'm sure.
Shane Jackson told me, don't throw up on TV. Don't throw up on TV. And I went, okay. And threw up on TV and kept it in my throat.
Right.
And yeah, I threw it up.
I'm not letting it out. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And it's a wonderful, you know, I tell those stories and it's fun and it's great. But, you know, I really do, when I'm not being my whiny self, I only whine to Whitney. But when I'm not being my whiny self about things, I often look around and, you know, it's such a great journey. It's been so much fun to do some of the things I've done. You know, Bill Gamalek's helped me so much. Michael Mazur's helped me so much. Rest his soul. Mike Burwell. I mean, all the different people that I've worked with and got to know all across the country. And it's been a great journey to see all the different parts of the earth that I never thought I'd see. I've been to Mexico to umpire. I've been to Washington, the state of Washington, Washington, D.C., California, New York, all these places that a little kid from Decatur, Indiana, never thought he'd get a chance to see. And I've seen them all. And it's been amazing. I'm really thankful for all the things that have happened to me.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That didn't take the whole 30 minutes, right?
No, you did good. No, good
job. Good. It sounded like you obviously had an awesome path going on there. What are some of the most significant challenges you faced besides doing a game and not knowing that the pitcher's circle was there?
As far as challenges, you know, one of the things I tell people at camp all the time is that no matter what game you're doing, what level you're doing, it's the most important game to whoever's on the field. And that's a challenge for people to remember. The other challenge is just, you know, you're sometimes just physically worn out. You know, they don't care that your flight came in late, the coffee was cold. You know, you're trying to sleep and the newlyweds next to you in the hotel are not letting you sleep, which is funny because that's happened more than once in my career. You know, and you're still expected to go out there and be the best. You're not supposed to be the best. You're supposed to be perfect and then get better. So it's been difficult to get through that sometimes. But those are some challenges, you know, finding out that, hey, you have to eat on the road and figure out how to eat in a way so that you don't gain 40 pounds, because that's pretty easy to do too. McDonald's seems to be everywhere in this country and even in others. You know, just staying in shape, you know, learning the new rules that change not only year to year, but sometimes in the year, as the obstruction rule that came out last year again and then changed midway through has done. I mean, just trying to do all that is just a mental challenge. But again, it's something I'm really happy I've been involved in and happy that I've been able to help other people get involved in and do.
Yeah, that's awesome. So speaking of rules and the changes that they have, can you share an instance when you had to make a tough call on a lesser known rule and how that went over?
Almost every call that I get to pull out like that is a goes over like a lead balloon. Actually, last year I I'm gonna get a giggle out of somebody here for this. I had a rule come up that I know like the back of my hand and have called many, many times in my career, the interference by a retired runner. And I just absolutely kicked it. Girl, they're trying to turn double play. The runner from first is going to second. The shortstop takes the ball, throws it, hits her right in the helmet, bounces it away. And I wave a safe and stand there and go, I think I'm right. The coach from Toledo University, who I have so much respect for and apparently has so much respect for me, came out and said, isn't that interference? And then the other umpires came to me and said, isn't that interference? And somehow I got everybody to walk away from me nodding, going, well, Victor must be right. And the inning ended. I think they gave up another run or something. Then the inning ended, and I started thinking to myself, hey, there's one person on this field who everybody thinks is right and absolutely knows he's wrong right now.
Yeah.
I actually talked to Coach Bricamani after the game as I was walking to my car. And I said, why did you let me get away with that? She goes, I thought you were wrong, but it was you. So it was really hard for me to argue.
Yeah. So that's funny. I'm a consultant in my day job. And my job is to convince people to do it the way I say. And even when I don't know exactly what I'm supposed to do or what they're supposed to do, I say it like I do. And then they kind of go, oh, okay, well, you must know what you're talking about. And so I think that happened. Yeah. Oops.
I mean, I did. I just wasn't. Right. I don't know. Again, maybe I didn't have a sandwich or something before the game. I usually like sandwiches before the game.
Yeah, maybe. So since we're, this is a little bit out of order from what I was going to ask, but since we're on it, you have to pick another one now. So did you listen to episode 10, the bad umpiring stories by chance?
I listened to a little bit of it. Okay. It's been a minute.
So the biggest one that I had was, you know, in my very first JV game, and it was actually with an umpire that you're very familiar with, but I won't call her out here on the podcast. She'll know who she is, but, you know, her initials are Maria. But anyway, my very first JV game, she was, it was one of her early games too. It may have been her first JV game, and she was on the bases and I was on the plate, and we had bases loaded, less than two outs, ground ball to the shortstop. And I had convinced myself that the best place for me was in the diamond somewhere. And so me and the ball and the runner and the catcher, you know, we all ended up at the same place at the same time, and it was ugly. And here comes the called the girl safe. And so here comes the defensive coach, and he goes, what the heck was that? And my reply to him was, well, that, coach, was what we call bad umpiring. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, completely my bad, but I do think I got it right. I turned around and looked, and her foot was on the plate before the catcher got to the plate, and I was in the way, but runner safe, and that's what we're going to do. And it was just bad umpiring. He really couldn't say much and went back to the dugout. But other than the one where you kicked the interference by a retired runner, you got one that comes top of mind?
Well, you know, it's funny when people ask about something like this, and I feel fortunate and yet unfortunate enough to say I'm now the old guy that has so many stories I can kind of flip through the Rolodex and pick a good one. But I'm going to pick one that's actually from basketball. I had a game where a star player, I don't know what got into me. I called a foul on the star player, put him in foul trouble, walked over to coach and stand there waiting. He goes, Victor, hang on, coach. I said, all right, we got White, 33. I have a push. We're going to shoot two. And I look at him and said, I suck. What do you want me to do? And he just started laughing. And I go, I don't know what got it. He wasn't anywhere near there. Maybe his shadow fouled up, coach. I have nothing. And so he's standing there. And I wish I could find the video of it because he sent it to me later on. But him and I, we're laughing and having a good time. The crowd is screaming at me. Of course, it's Indiana basketball, so you know, it's a religion, and they are getting the tar and feathers out. But he was dying laughing because he goes, I've never heard you admit you were wrong. I said, well, you don't listen to me very often because I'm wrong a lot.
I'm wrong a lot, and I say it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that, I mean, the thing is, people don't understand in officiating, and we do because we're officials. It's so much to watch, somehow you have to Rolodex all the rules that you know. And you know, I probably shouldn't say Rolodex because there are people in my life who probably have no idea what Rolodex means. Yeah, I mean, there's young people. Anyway, I have to somehow access all that information and make a decision within a split second. And oh, yeah, by the way, the ball's still moving, so you got to do something else. It's just so difficult. But at the same time, it's fun. It's a challenge. You know, it isn't life or death, which is what I remind myself of all the time. And it's just great to be involved in it all the way around.
Sure. So you kind of mentioned the situation there where, you know, you had a little bit of a potential conflict and you kind of diffused it with the basketball coach. What are some of your pieces of advice for handling conflicts on the field? Mostly, I'd say, I guess, between coaches and yourself. But how do you handle those high stress situations, and what kind of tips might you have for the listeners?
Well, I think if you're and again, we're talking about softball, one of the best things to do is wait. Try your best to not throw arms out there. One of the things that we talk about is obstruction, where people want to put their arms out real fast and I've got an obstruction or I'm making a call. I'm calling this person out, and then you see the ball bouncing away. If you can be patient, that helps a lot. When a coach comes out to talk to you, and this is something that I'm constantly working on, and I have someone in my life that I can work on it with because she tries my patience. But if you learn to just breathe in and listen to the whole situation, you can find out maybe they're asking a question you don't know. I see younger umpires, younger officials, newer officials, when someone comes out to question them, they start throwing the information out. Well, you know, coach, when I saw the tag, it was on her hip. And this, that, and the other, and definitely I got her early on, so I have an out. And the coach goes, well, that's great. Can I ask if she missed first?
No.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know. So Ooh. That's, yeah, it's basically one of the best things to do in just about everything in life, whether it's officiating or dealing with a significant other, whatever. Sometimes it's better to take a breath and just go, okay, let me hear the whole situation before I respond. And that's something that I think would help a lot of newer officials to slow down.
Yeah, that's some good advice.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect advice. I would add just a little piece to it that says if you can slow down, and then when you do talk to them, if they question a rule, if you're using the words that come from the rule book, I found that to be very helpful as well. Yeah. Use the right terminology. So, Victor, you once said to me, and this is a quote, I didn't write it down, but it was so impactful to me. I remember it verbatim, but you said that people think they want to be a D1 umpire, but it comes at a cost. If you're married, you will maybe get divorced and some other stuff like that. So what does a typical D1 series look like? So if you make it to D1, what does that series look like? And when does your preparation for that specific event start? And what's a day in the life really kind of like, what's that look like? If you make it to D1, what's it do?
It's not only a day in the life, it's almost a year in the life anymore. You know, I'm blessed to already have some of my schedule. I know Whitney already has some of her schedule, and we're already looking and going, okay, well, we know who the coaches are. We know she's going here, I'm going here. You know, we have to kind of halfway coordinate, you know, being able to spend time with each other and keeping each other important in our lives. But at the same time, you know, she has a real job, I don't. So my job is a little easier. I don't have a real job. But, you know, you have to think about, okay, well, how's this going to impact travel? How's this, you know, when do I have to leave? Do I need to have a babysitter? You know, and that's not me anymore, but I have to watch the cats. You know, what are you going to eat on the way? Well, what hotels do we stay in? You know, then as you get closer and closer to the series, okay, well, how big is this series in the conference? Are these two teams fighting for national rankings? Has there been an incident with a coach? There's a particular coach who's no longer in the MAC that I used to honestly look at the schedule and have to start mentally preparing myself to deal with her for a week ahead of time, just because I knew it was going to be a question on everything that happened. And honestly, to her credit, she's a great coach. So more power to her. She's a winner and good for her. I'm just glad I don't have her on my schedule this year. You know, that personality conflict, but she's a winner and she deserves everything that she's gotten. You know, then you depending on the conference and anymore, a lot of the conferences due to TV are starting to do, we play a game on Friday, a game on Saturday, a game on Sunday. So now I've got to get in town. I try and get in town at least early in the morning, if not the day before. Where am I going to stay? When do my partners come in? Hey, what are we wearing? Did I do my laundry? Again, I'm one of the umpires that if I'm going to make a 5-hour, 6-hour trip, I may find 2 or 3 games along the way. So I have to do all those Under Armours tend to hold the smell a little bit. I've got to do a lot of laundry. Make sure your clothes are pressed. Make sure everything else. And then, you know, as the game comes, then you're there 1.5 hours early to get into the locker room, make sure everybody's there, start cleaning stuff. You know, figure out who's got a physical ailment. People don't think about that, but umpires are humans, and we keep getting hurt. I've had multiple concussions on the field. I've had hips that are, you know, I'm pushing back into place. This last year, I struggled in the last 1.5 weeks. I was having a knee problem that I had to end up getting a cortisone shot for, but I was struggling to run like I normally run. So we had to make some adjustments on how I was going to cover some of the chases that we were doing. But again, we always have to go over the obstruction rule because every week there's a new interpretation. Whitney has been on my case to watch the videos more often. So I try and watch the videos a little more often. And hey, by God, they change something every week. It's a tough job. But again, every day that I'm out there on the field, I think to myself, well, I could be turning a screw at a factory. And I'm really loving what I do. Even when it's cold, wet, and rainy, it's where I want to be. Whether it's softball, basketball, you know, I just love being out there and being part of it. And knowing that, and she hates that I say this, but knowing that I'm closer to the end of my career than the beginning of it, it's like I try and take it in a little bit more every time I do it. So
that makes perfect sense. Yeah. Yep. So, Victor, we've been going for a while here. We got 3 more questions for you.
I can go forever, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but Pete has to make the edits to the podcast, so we're going to have to cut it a little bit short, but we can certainly do a follow-up, too.
I was laughing because I'm going 30 minutes, and we're already at 48. Pete's going to be like, oh, great, I'm cutting everything.
Right?
Yeah, so Victor, what kind of advice do you have for umpires who want to aspire to go as far as they can? Like, what are the things they need to be looking to do and to make themselves better and make themselves available for advancement and to be noticed and everything that comes with that?
The first thing I tell people all the time is make sure you can control what you can control. So don't show up in flip-flops and a t-shirt to your first meeting because that reflects on you. Learn to not speak back to officials who are perceived to be higher level than you because they affect your career in the background. I give most people 4 or 5, maybe even 6 chances to mess with me before I stop talking to them. But there are officials out there who, you know, if you say something negative to them, turn around and immediately make that a priority in their career to make sure you don't get noticed. You know, and again, I'm not talking about anything on the field yet. You know, if you know you are a bigger person, dress appropriately. Try and find things that will flatter you. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's amazing how many people, it doesn't matter if you're bigger. David, I'm not going to pick on you, but you are 6'4", right? But I don't ever see David showing up sloppy. He always looks good and has clothes on that fit him correctly. So it doesn't occur to me that he's a bigger person and he moves well, you know, but if somebody shows up and they're a bigger person and they don't move well, now that's held against them. Make sure your uniforms are nice. Make sure they're when you have your equipment that you have a way to take it from place to place. Don't just carry it in your hand. My shin guards are hanging over my shoulders. I often tell umpires, when you show up to a major league game, do you expect to see the major league umpires or, you know, in this case, Division I softball umpires walking back and forth and dragging their chest protectors where you could see it?
Right. Yeah,
because if you do, I'm interested to see who it is because they probably won't be there very long.
Yeah, it's almost like like the fire truck. You know, it's always clean and looks great because that's it has to, right? That's its number one. The number one thing is for respect is to look good. You know, you gotta look like you're gonna be good at what you're doing.
Policemen, EMTs, firemen, they all are put together when they show up somewhere. So why would we be any different? Yeah. Again, that's a controllable. If it's something I can control, then I want to get to the point where if an assigner won't hire me, it's because they A, don't like me, or B, don't think I'm very good. And then I've done everything I can do.
Right. Yep. Well, speaking of that, I'll throw myself under a bus here. You don't like my called third strike mechanic.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I just said it sucks.
Right. Exactly. In fact, I think you said something
those
like...
Those seem almost synonymous.
Yeah, they're pretty close to each other. But so I've had to make some adjustments to it. And so, you know, we'll see the new one at Bill's camp. We'll see if you like it any better. But can you give our listeners some tips on what you're looking for as an assigner and somebody that's advancing people? You know, what kind of a third strike mechanic makes sense, you know, for what you're seeing? If you can actually, you know, put it into words.
I guess for me, I want two things. I always want umpires' heads to face the play. I know my mentor, Bill Gmalek, his strike three, he moves to his left and his head turns a little. And I've always got on his case. I said, so what happens if something happens back at the plate and you're not looking? And he says some words of wisdom. And then finally, I think it basically comes out that, shut up, Victor.
Shut up, Victor.
But I think if you're developing a third strike signal, there's two things that I look for, and you can do whatever you want, right? It just has to look good. But I like being able to keep my head forward so that I can see anything else that might happen after I call the third strike, interference by a batter, you know, the catcher dropping the ball, fights between the batters and catchers, which doesn't happen very often, but has happened in my career, and I need to be able to react, right? The second thing I like to do is I like to create some distance between me and the catcher, just in case they're making a throw of some sort. You know, if I my particular one, and you can find it on some certain Instagrams and Yahoos or YouTubes, I mean, but mine pulls up so that my body comes up and then I bounce away from the catcher with my head forward still. That's what I'm looking for. I don't really care how you get there because we're all different. David is much taller than I am, so his third strike raising up is a lot more imposing than mine is. But I also want people to be violent, I guess, in their third strike call. I want it to be a quick movement because I think that looks better, but I may be in the minority in that. So I just think if you keep those two things in mind, create distance and keep your eyes forward, then you can develop things certain ways, and whatever assigner you're looking for might give you some other advice. I think sure. David sucks, but
so I've changed it.
I haven't seen it yet. We'll see what happens in the fall. Maybe it sucks less.
Yeah, it sucks less. It definitely sucks less. It might just be a little bit less.
Now we just got to get them to call third strikes.
Quite frankly, in some of the games that I had this year, Victor, I think I could probably count the number of called strikes because the girls were swinging the bat. Mm-hmm. I was loving it. I was like, I don't have to work. This is great.
As you get higher level games, whether they're college, high school, whatever, what I tell people is if you're getting called third strikes in the fifth, sixth, seventh inning and you don't have a dominant pitcher, then you kind of have to start wondering if you're guessing at the strike zone. Because if I'm doing my job correctly, they know where the strikes are and they're going to wave at the pitch, even if they can't get to it.
Right.
So just kind of a thing for people to put in their back pocket. Unless you've got, you know, I guess I'll throw out a new style girl. If you've got, what's her name? Nyjah Kennedy. And she's somebody you might get a call third in the sixth or seventh because she's going to throw something that people don't see. But if you've got, you know, the number two pitcher for St. Norbert College, and you're getting called thirds, you may not be calling the same strike zone from the beginning to the end.
Right.
Possible, but less likely.
Sure. Victor, I got to tell you, this has been fantastic. I think for our very first interview, we couldn't have had a better guest on. You've been very forthcoming and very helpful. I'm sure that our listeners will put some comments out there on this one. Anything you would like to share before we close it up?
I guess the thing that I would tell people, you know, number one, just really enjoy the journey. And I've told that to lots of people. Of course, you know, I'm going to say it again out loud because Whitney's going to get to step on the field here in Oklahoma a little bit later on. And I'm going to tell her, look around because you never know when you're going to need to come back. And you feel like it's, you know, it's you do it and you get to do things all the time. And I've been on all these amazing places. And at the same time, never know when you get to be back. I've had some wonderful crews. I've had some great friends. I've had some people that I've had amazing times with, and I never saw them again. One of my best friends in softball, Chad Vanderstelt, retired out of the blue, basically, 2 years ago. And I can't think of the last time we were actually on the field together, but like it makes me sad to know that I didn't really take that moment in. The kids get to play all the time and they don't think about it either, but I really think there's times, and again, maybe this is me getting to be a little bit older, but look around and just enjoy the moment when you can, and then do your work and then enjoy, you know, take a look one more time.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Stop and smell the roses. Right? Yep. Make sure that you don't walk by all the roses, because that's the hard work that you put in is going to take you to a place that has a bed full of roses, and make sure that you enjoy them when you get there. Victor, yep. Thanks again. I certainly do appreciate it.
Yep.
Yep. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Do I sign off or do I just leave?
No, we'll take care of it. So listeners, that's what we have for you. Thanks for listening.
Yep. Until next time.